Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This program is all about music and people who make it, and today we don't have a guest. That's right, two solid hours of great music. What I'm going to do here today, and I know it's not Flashback Thursday, but we're going to flashback anyway to some of the glory days of my youth in the local scene. Bands from the late 70s, 80s, and right on up into the 2000s. Local bands from Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland. You're going to hear some of their original music off of their albums. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the history. And some of these bands made it, some didn't. We'll hear it all after your headlines. Good afternoon, everyone. Tom Lounge is here, and it's time for Midwest Beat. As I mentioned, on the other side, it's a no-guest day here. Instead, I thought I'd have some fun, because every once in a while, I like to dig out some of the music from my past here in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland. Now, we have a lot of great talents here today. They're out there playing whenever they can, and they've been on this show. But I go back about 40 years in the Chicago scene, and there's a lot of great bands that have come along and made huge successes of themselves. Of course, I'm talking about some of the great bands that we see on our sister television station, WTTW's Cornerstones of Rock, bands like the Ides of March, the Crying Shames, the Shadows of Night, the Buckinghams, just so many great bands out of Chicagoland that came, and of course, Chicago and Cheap Trick. We know those bands. We know REO Speedwagon. We know Chicago. We know them bands. But what about the bands that were bubbling under then? The bands that almost grabbed that brass ring, and in some cases did. They got record deals, but they didn't quite have the longevity. Well, I'm going to take you back to some of those bands that I thought were amazing. And maybe you were there in the clubs back then. Maybe you weren't. But if you're out there and you love music, this is our roots. This is where a lot of our today's bands came from, because they grew up watching these artists. Let's go back now to one of my favorite groups to work with. They used to play at the Point East, and they played a few shows at other venues for me. They were signed to Cleveland International Records, which was distributed by Epic, which is now Sony, of course. So they did grab that brass ring, and they put a great album out, I'll tell you. And the band spawned into other bands, which we'll talk about. But first, let's go back to the title track of the amazing 1978 album from Chicago's own, Boys from Illinois. This is Too Wild to Tame on Midwest Beat. Check it out. Dirty Dan Buck on vocals.
Come on, sadness. Before I slip between your thighs.
Baby, you know what I like. Dirty Dan Buck, a guy who was known for literally swinging from the rafters in local nightclubs. Talk about a wild party band. Those guys epitomized it. They had the whole biker look, of course. The cover was a knockoff of the Wild Ones and with Marlon Brando on their album. But they were signed to Cleveland International Records that was distributed through Epic Records through Sony and Columbia. And they toured all around the country. I don't know if they toured around the world, but they did tour around the country and shared stages with many top acts of the day. In fact, they were earmarked to be a big national act. And I don't know what exactly happened, but things fell apart. Boys never released the second album. But the guys did go on to do different things. Dirty Dan, the lead singer, went on to form Dirt's Raiders. And they used to dress in camo and they'd come on. And it was kind of like watching Chuck Norris and the Braddock brothers or something there from the movies. I mean, they were still wild guys. And the other guys of the band, well, they went on to join up with a new lead singer, a guy named Tommy Holland. And with Tommy, they got signed. And in 1982, they released this album. It's The Bees, Get Up, Get Angry. Same band you just heard, but with a different singer, Tommy Holland. Let's check it out.
It's dark inside, no place to hide your head. Don't tell me now. The book has just been read. I don't need you no more in my life. That's what I said. Just a thought of what you've done, I see red. Yeah. Get up, get angry, get even better still. Get up, get angry, got to know when to make your kill. When pleasures rise to the cries of life, take the pressure down. Get tight.
don't you know I loved you so? Now you're gonna hit the ground. Get up, get angry, get even better still. Get up, get angry, got to know when to make your
kind of underscoring that revenge is best served cold. Get up, get angry, get even better still. That song really put those guys on the map. That is the Bees, former members of the Boys that we heard earlier. That came out in 1982. Get up, get angry. It featured Michael Tafoya on guitars. He left the Boys and with Dave Angel, and they got Tommy Holland in the group and keeping the beat there. That drum was pretty intense, didn't you think? There's a guy named Steve Riley. Well, Steve Riley went on to join up with Blackie Lawless and became quite famous as a member of Wasp. And these guys are all from the Chicagoland area. And what a great group. The Bees. They later became morphed into another group with Tommy. And I think Mr. Tafoya was there as well in Holland. And they had a song in the Girls Just Want to Have Fun movie. Lots of stuff with this band. The Boys really spawned into quite a family tree of region-made Northwest Indiana, Chicago, and Midwest rock. We may get to something else from them a little later in today's show that's connected to them anyway. But that was the heavier side, the harder side of the Chicago scene back in the very early 80s. Let's go now to the poppier side. Of course, we had Cheap Trick, and those guys really excited the radio. Budokan came out, an album that was never supposed to be released here in America. It was a fan-only album for the fans in Japan. But a radio station started playing cuts from it, and the rest is, as they say, history. The fans demanded it be released, and it was, and it became a great live album and put Cheap Trick on the map in a very big way outside of Chicago. But Cheap Trick led the pack, but they certainly were not the first and the only. We also had groups like Pez Band. What a great group they were. They were signed as well to an international label and didn't quite make it outside of the niche, I guess you'd say. They were kind of a cult-followed band, but they did spawn into other groups. And another band that did very, very well here in Chicago, and why they never got bigger and signed with a major label, I'll never know. They were one of my favorite bands of 1982, the same year they gave us the Boys, and the Bees, rather. And this is a group, we've had some of the members on this show in past years, and I know they've got new material. Actually, they've got old material they're reissuing because some of the guys have passed away. So some of the remaining members are putting out some stuff today. But this goes back to their single, a double-sided hit single. Not too many bands can say they had those. It's called Total Insanity and When You Rock. That was the double side. This is Side A, When You Rock. When you rock with the kind, you'll know it. Here they are.
There's one thing you don't understand. When I'm with you, I'm still alone. We can be in the same room, same time. Don't mean a thing. Ooh, when you rock, yeah, you knock me out. Ooh, when you move, make me lose control. I know I'm not gonna ever stop. Lock all the doors, disconnect the phone. I should be gone, but I'm the clock staring. Your eyes caught me, now there's no
from 1982, one of the sides of a double-sided single from the kind, When You Rock. And they did rock. Total Insanity was the other one. They also did a great version of The Supremes. And it's interesting because The Kind were actually two bands. They started out in the early days in 1975-76 in the Belmont Heights area. And the guys were different. They were more of a harder-edged, still poppy, but they formed out of the Pez Band group, basically, as far as they shared a lot of lineage there and friendships. And then later on, members changed, and they became the kind we just heard there, which had the most success. But that's not knocking the first incarnation of the kind. And Stan Sikora, who's a founding member of that, actually was in the studio with us not too long ago. And they have issued the Needle Drop album and some other stuff that you can find out there now on both vinyl and CD, the early kind, the pre-When You Rock kind, going back to the 70s. And right about the same time the original kind were doing their thing, there was another band out of Chicago that partnered up a lot with Cheap Trick. In fact, they shared the same management company, and that might be why they landed a deal with Atlantic Records. And they put out two albums that I know of, and then they got back together years later. Most of the guys in this band teamed up with former members of Pez Band. It became known as Black and Blue. And we won't get to Black and Blue, but we will go back to the first album by a group called Off Broadway. You might remember Cliff Johnson. He's still out there. He's still doing it. And he was in a band called The Thumbs, and he shared some time with Mimi Betinas in The Thumbs. And those guys went on to form, Mimi went on to form Pez Band, and Cliff went on to leave Pez Band and Mimi and form this group called Off Broadway. And they toured with all the big names. Like I said, they were very much Cheap Trick influenced, but they certainly had their own fingerprints on pop music. They were among the bands, and we're going to hear another one called The Shoes shortly. They were among the bands in Chicagoland that pioneered what came to be known as power pop. There would be no power pop if it hadn't been for Pez Band and, of course, Shoes and Off Broadway. So enough talk. Let's rock. This is from Debut Music's track one, Stay in Time, Off Broadway. Very Beatles influence. That is Off Broadway from their debut album, 1980. It came out. The album was called On. It had a light bulb exploding, and they used to perform with a light bulb above the lead singer Cliff Johnson's head for a while. And he used to wear the little schoolboy shorts, kind of like Angus did in AC/DC. Had the big curly hair and was just incredible showman. Kind of like what I was talking about with the boys from Illinois and Dirty Dan Buck, where you never knew what to expect. It was a high-energy show. I mean, these guys were not just great rock musicians. They were rock performers. They were complete entertainers. People like Cliff Johnson and Dirty Dan and John Hunter of the Hounds, they didn't just stand there. There wasn't no shoegazing going on back then, boys and girls. I'll tell you, these guys rocked, and they got the audience rocking. They would jump into the crowd. They would do craziness, and it worked. Off-Broadway had signed, as I mentioned, with Atlantic Records. They released two national albums. And that one is still getting a lot of airplay around the country, especially on some of the college and smaller stations that just realized the genius of Off-Broadway. They had that Beatlesque sound. They had a very Cheap Trick influence. But yet, if you listen to Cheap Trick and you listen to Off-Broadway back-to-back, they are completely different bands. They sound very different. They shared management, they shared national labels, they shared tours, but Off-Broadway definitely stands on their own. Cliff Johnson later got back together with his old friend Mimi Betinas of Pez Band fame, and they formed Black and Blonde, and that, I want to say, was the early 90s, perhaps. Don't quote me on that, but they had a couple of releases out as well, and now Cliff is back doing the Off-Broadway songs. I think it's called the Cliff Johnson Band, but again, don't quote me. I'm just kind of winging it here because I just felt like playing some great old music that I grew up on, or came of age with, I should say. That was already grown up by the time I was working with these guys. At a place called the Point East, you may remember that, and Off-Broadway was a staple there, along with Survivor. Survivor was almost like a house band. Of course, Jim Peterik was already very famous and already a rock star for having founded and lead singer and guitarist and songwriter of Ides of March. 1970, they had number one international song with Vehicle. But by that point, Jim had dissolved Ides of March and went on to Survivor. But that's a story for another day. Let's continue on with the power pop. The power pop scene really formed in Chicago. I mean, there were bands like Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers and the Rubinoos and people like that that were doing it down in the West Coast area. But Chicago was really the home of power pop. And one of the other bands that helped pioneer that sound and really don't get their just due, they had their own record label. They were truly one of the first indie artists that I've ever heard of. They literally recorded their songs in the living room of the two brothers that formed a band, the Murphy Brothers. They recorded in the living room, in their parents' living room in Zion, Illinois. They released it and produced it on their own label, Black Vinyl Records. So let's go back to the same year that Off-Broadway gave a Stay in Time. This is the band out of Zion, John and Jeff Murphy and Company, I'll call it. They've been on the show before. I think they're still making some music out there. I hope they are. But this goes back to 1980 and their early album, Present Tense. This is Too Late by Shoes. Don't say the Shoes. It's just Shoes. Here they are.
You call
too late, too late. Shoes. I remember one time I wrote a story on them. I interviewed the guys, and I referred to them as the Shoes. And boy, did they get upset with me. They said, there's so many the bands out there. The Knack, the this, the that. They said, we don't use the, we're just Shoes. So I always have to emphasize that. I don't want to incur the wrath of the Murphys again. Just joking, though, but they are still out there making music as far as I know. We had John on. We had Jeff on. That's who we had on a few years ago. They had a new album out, and I had them on the show. And I really love these guys. They're another one of those Chicago bands that you scratch your head and you say, why? For goodness sake, why didn't they get bigger than they were? They were huge in the Midwest. They used to play all the big rooms, Beginnings and Haymakers, and they toured. But they never quite made it. I mean, they went to England. They toured everywhere. They gave it the great shot. They had a huge following, but the record labels never came really sniffing around for them at that point. And they were one of the pioneers of the power pop scene. And I really think we need to give them their just due. A lot of the bands that came along in their wake certainly ripped off some of the riffs. And so we've heard some great power pop. Let's recap, as we say in the school biz. We heard Shoes right there. We heard Off-Broadway. We heard The Kind. They were The Kind. And this is another band that we're going to play that's part of the power pop scene. We got one or two more, and then we're going to move on to some different styles of music, because Chicago in Northwest Indiana, if anything, is very diverse. It's a broad menu of sounds. And I keep saying Northwest Indiana, and we are going to get to Northwest Indiana bands. This is a two-hour show. So we're starting off with some of the famous and near-famous groups that didn't quite become superstars from Chicagoland in the South Side. And that's the bands we're playing right there. This group, again, 1980 was a very good year. I don't know what it was in the water in 1980, but we heard Off-Broadway and Shoes, and they were both, those songs we heard were from 1980, and so was this one. These guys, to my best knowledge, never got signed to a major label, but they were one of the top bands of 1980 in Chicagoland. In fact, they made it, a lot of radio stations were doing hometown albums back in the 70s and the 80s, the KQX, The Loop, MET, everybody was doing albums. And these guys made it on The Loop's Greatest Chicago Bands album. It was released in 1980. This is an interesting group. Again, power pop, a little more rock to it. It's called It Only Takes a Minute, and it takes a little more than that to enjoy this. It's Lois Lane, live on Midwest Beat.
With you if you'd only try. There's something
Well, it actually took about 3.5 minutes there, not just a minute. That is a great Chicago band called Lois Lane. I'm sure they're long in the annals of history. Don't know whatever happened to those guys, but they were another one of those power pop groups out of Chicago that, again, probably really should have made it. They were a strong act. You got to remember back then, folks, when I was doing a place called The Point East in Linwood, and you guys were all hanging out there, and we had so many amazing bands that did very, very well for us in Chicagoland. And the scene was different. So for those that are young, that grew up in, that are in their 30s now or 40s, you probably don't realize that back in those days, there was nothing to do. We didn't have video games or arcades, really. We had a few pinball machines, but we didn't have video games. We didn't have computers. We certainly had no cell phones. Your options at night, if you were a young adult and wanted to go out and have some fun, your options were pretty bleak. You could go to the movies, either the indoor or the drive-in. You could watch network television, of which we had the three big networks, WGN, and I think WFLD was around back then. So you had a handful of radio or television stations you could watch. And, of course, right around midnight, 1 o'clock, they would all go off the air, and you'd see a test pattern that would just hum. And so that was what life was here in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland and pretty much everywhere in America back in the days of which we're playing. So there was nothing to do. You could stay home, watch network television, have some popcorn. You could go to the drive-in or go to the cinema. You could maybe go roller skating. That was an option. That was still pretty big back then. Or what most of us did, you could go to a local club and see a great live band. Now, the live bands were happening. There were bars and clubs in every single town and burg and city all around the area. And dollars to donuts, you could guarantee that wherever you went, you could see a great band because the bands were really top shelf because it was a lot of competition. And 6-7 nights a week, they were rocking. You'd go from one bar to another and always see a great band. Many of them bubbling under from the national labels or signed to national labels. This is another group. They were more prog rocky, but they still had that power pop groove. And they came out, when did they come out? This would have been 1981, I think. Again, don't quote me on the dates, but I'm going off my memory here, and that's 40 years ago. They were signed to Epic Records. They were called Trillion. They released two albums. Clear Approach was a great album. That was their second one. But the first one, it was just called Trillion, and it had three white lion heads on it, or tiger heads, rather, and they're snarling out of a big bank of snow. They were like albino tigers in a snow pile. It was a pretty cool cover, actually. And they were inspired by bands like Boston. So Trillion was founded to kind of capitalize on the Boston sound by Patrick Leonard. Now, maybe you'll recognize that name, Patrick Leonard, the keyboardist and primary songwriter-producer of this band. After Trillion went on to do a variety of other things, among them were producing artists like maybe Madonna and Michael Jackson. And he had some solo projects as well. But this is the act that introduced us to that great artist, Patrick Leonard, from Chicago, along with Bill Wilkins on drums and so many others. Fergie Ferguson, who went on to sing for Louisiana LaRue. Fergie also did a bunch of other things. He worked here and there with Jim Peterik, and he was the lead singer on this. Frank Barbalace on guitar, great guitar player. Bass was Ron Animan. Trillion was signed to Epic Records, and they were produced by Gary Lyons, who had just put together Foreigner's first album. And Trillion had a good fortune of being paired on tour with bands like Heart, Styx, and Aerosmith. So they did very well. Trillion had a double hit, and we're going to play them both back-to-back. They kind of worked them out so they go together. So we're going to hear Trillion, about 6 minutes worth of Trillion. A song called Hold Out starts us, Big Boy wraps it up, and this is Trillion taking you back. This is 1978, by the way. I did check it, 1978. Here we go.
Thank you. head around, running away from what you must do.
Cause it's-
sending that out to all the big boys and all the big girls that love that band. I remember working with them a couple of times back in the day. That came out in 1978, and that was the first of two albums that they released, and that was called Trillion. And the thing about Trillion, they had that prog rock sound, and but they never lost the pop sound of Chicago. That was another band out of Chicago. Lead singer and keyboardist and songwriter of Trillion, Pat Leonard, originally from Crystal Falls, Michigan, by way of Chicago. He went on after Trillion to do a couple of great things. He had a group that, if you were into the artsy thing, if you were a hipster back then, you might remember Toy Matinee. It was a project he did with a guy named Kevin Gilbert, and that was a pretty phenomenal thing. If you find that in the cutout bins or a used record bin, pick it up. I think you'll like it. Toy Matinee was pretty brilliant and ahead of its time. Later, he formed Third Matinee with a guy named Richard Page, and if you're from the 80s, you might recognize that name. Richard Page was the bass player, I think, but he was definitely the lead singer of Mr. Mister. Remember those guys? Broken Wings, Kyrie. He teamed up with Patrick. What a dynamic duo that was on an album called Third Matinee, and that's really hard to find. So if you find it, send me a copy. Patrick Leonard also went on to work with a variety of other artists as a producer. He worked with Leonard Cohen, Brian Ferry. I think he did some stuff with Rod Stewart. I know he worked with Michael Jackson, but he's best known perhaps for his production work and collaborating with Madonna. He worked on her albums True Blue, Who's That Girl, Like a Prayer, Breathless, Ray of Light, and I think he did a few others. But not sure what he's doing today, but I'm sure he's keeping really busy because he's an amazingly talented man. Patrick Leonard, Pride of Chicago. Today on Midwest Beat, we are flashing back. It's not Flashback Thursday or Throwback Thursday. It's Flashback Friday. I'm giving you some of the groups that we're bubbling under, bands that you might have heard, might have seen, but didn't quite make it to the leagues of, say, REO Speedwagon, Cheap Trick, or Chicago, or even the Smashing Pumpkins. These are bands from the region in Chicagoland that did very well, and I like to remember them because they did so much to enhance the Chicagoland music scene back then. This next group, and then we're going to start heading into Northwest Indiana in just a few minutes here. I promise you that. We got some great bands from that same era that we're going to revisit here from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But first, seven-piece group, which was a pretty big band back then. They were signed to a Chicago label called Ovation Records, and my friend Kerry Baker was the publicist of Ovation, and he turned me on to this group. And I'm still good friends with Bill Sinar, who is now, you know, part of Classical Blast. And he's been in the studio and on this show many times. But this goes back to Bill's early days when he was working with a trio of incredible girl singers. Lady singers, I guess I should say. Pam Bradley, Sandy Caulfield, and Barb Erber. They were known as Tantrum. And they had two albums out. And this is the hit single that got them all over the place in Chicagoland. It did very well for them, and hopefully you'll remember it, because they'd rather be rocking with you as I am here on Midwest Beat. This is Tantrum.
I'm
I'd rather be rocking with them anytime. I love that band. I had the biggest crush on one of their singers, but that's another story. Anyway, good stuff there. That is Tantrum, and I lied. I did lie to you. I said they had two albums out. There were two that were released, Tantrum and Rather Be Rockin'. That's from 1979, Rather Be Rockin'. They also did an album called Breakaway back in the early 2000s. I'm not sure what developed with that. I'm not sure if that was released or shelved or parts of it came out. Not really sure there, but they had two official albums out on Ovation Records, and a couple of these gals, Sandy Caulfield, one of the singers, she sang on Dennis DeYoung's solo album, Desert Moon. She also sang with Kenny Rogers, and some of these guys went on to do other different things, including Bill Sinnar, who I had mentioned before the song played, is a member of Classical Blast. And as you know, if you listen to this program, we've had Classical Blast on a number of times. In fact, I brought them to the Art Theater and the Acorn Theater a couple times as well for their Dark Side of the Yule Christmas show, as well as their regular show that blends a rock rhythm section, of course, Bill on bass, and classical violins and cellos and all that fun stuff. So interesting. These guys and gals are moving on. Like I said, the songs we're playing here are all from the 80s, a little bit of the early, late 70s, and we're going to move up here in just a second. But a lot of these artists are still out there making music and still influencing. And that's why I think it's important once in a while to do one of these Flashback Friday shows where we dig out my old record collection, my old CD collection, and we spin them and remind people of who came before us. All those great bands we're seeing right now in the clubs and theaters. Well, maybe not right now, but we did in pre-COVID. And we will see them again. But taking this time not just to introduce the newer acts here on this show, but to remember our history. And Tantrum's definitely part of my history.